Andeham Shri Guru Shri Atav Parakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Ditam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Taitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha. This is going to be a long lecture. I propose stopping at 9 o'clock and starting again later, and whoever can come along later can come. So, the topic is some of my concerns about matters in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness today. What I'm going to speak about is specifically in response to a query that I got, but it has a much broader application than simply answering the question which had been asked by actually two devotees wrote me about this. The background is that some time ago, not very long, a few months ago, some devotees approached me in Bombay, and they'd heard one lecture that I'd given on Kshatriya spirit, and they were inspired to take up Kshatriya-type services. I don't know if it was just from the lecture or if that lecture further inspired them. And they asked, what did I think about the idea of starting a Kshatriya initiative within ISKCON. So I said, yeah, I think that's a good idea, and I referred them to Bhakti Raghav's. Hold your cough if you can. I referred them to Bhakti Raghav Swami, who is heading up Varnashram initiatives within our movement. So then a few days ago, I got a letter from another devotee, he's an aspiring disciple of mine, who proposed to join that project, and he gave some of the works that they're doing or they propose to do, and one of them was promoting the midday meals project within ISKCON. And I didn't reply very extensively, but I said that no, I don't think it's a very good idea you join that. It seems that the Kshatriya project is off course. I'm paraphrasing, I can't remember exactly what I said. So then that devotee wrote back and now I'm coughing. I'm allowed to cough. You're not. Here, actually, that's the culture. So he wrote back and said that, well, he thought that, like, welfare activities felt... He could understand why ISKCON shouldn't do that or might not be expected to do that, but as this is a Kshatriya body which is operating within Varnashram, and that's a pious activity, welfare activities, and that Kshatriyas, one of the things they do is welfare activities for human society, that he thought it would be acceptable within that context. And I also got an email from the One of the devotees who had approached me several months before starting this project, and told me some of how it's being very well accepted by ISKCON leaders. That midday meals is just one of the things. They have many things that they wish to do. And he wishes to meet me to discuss and understand why I seem to have changed. So I'm going to speak somewhat extensively. Whatever I say, I could say more about this. Another thing I'm going to say now about all of this are things that I've not said before, and I've discussed some of these things with several of you, and some of them I've said in recorded lectures, which are out there on the internet, so it's not that I'm saying anything new in this regard, but I'm bringing together in one lecture many different points. I plan to write a book covering these topics in more detail, which is a better way to do things overall, to cover each point thoroughly with quotes and systematic reasoning, but it takes a lot of time, and I have many other writing projects. I should finish the ones which I've already started. So there are many important books I have to write. That's one of them, and it's some analysis of various problems or deviations within ISKCON and perennial problems that are liable to perennially afflict our organization. I wanted to write a book, but now you could say I'm on the spot. That's an English saying, that someone's asked me specifically about this and I should give them a satisfying reply, which can't be done in just brushing it off. You could just say, well, that's all nonsense or something like that. But these are serious devotees who they want to do something seriously in the service of Srila Prabhupada. I have a serious disagreement with what they're doing. So this lecture, if you hear it all, it might be discouraging. The aim is not to discourage, but the subject matter is such that it may do. But on the other hand, it should be spoken, just like when the doctor tells the patient, you have cancer, it's not likely to make him feel better. I mean, to make him feel, if he tells him, well, actually, there's no problem. Just take some, that pain you have, just take an aspirin for the headache. But he's got a brain tumor, and tell him, take an aspirin. And, you know, smile, it makes you feel good. You have to tell him, you've got brain cancer. So sometimes it's necessary to say things which are unpleasant. Otherwise they can't be. There's no question of rectifying them. What I'm about to say will, or already is, often considered to be, in the language of others, extreme right-wing, conservative, orthodox, fanatical. But actually my attitudes in Krishna consciousness, they were the standard in ISKCON when Srila Prabhupada was present. It was like universal, why is that? Because Prabhupada inculcated in us the mood and the attitudes that I'm going to talk about. Although it may be called by various names, it's It's actually what Prabhupada taught us. Of course, others may dispute that. But like I said, I'm not writing a book. I'm giving a lecture, so I'm not going to, you know, go into very, very, very long analysis of all the points and counterpoints. A few years ago, maybe 10 years ago now, one of my godbrothers made the observation that nowadays in ISKCON, if you just say and do and act in the same way that we did when Srila Prabhupada was present, then you're called dinosaur fanatic or something like that. Which I thought was an astute observation. Something wrong there. So, midday meals. You probably have all know what this is. There's a program run by several of our ISKCON centers. Actually, I think it's not... They have separate trusts to do it, as far as I know. It's not done in the name of ISKCON directly. This was actually dreamed up by Sri Madhu Pandit Das of the Ritvik Center in Bangalore under the name Akshay Patra, which means undiminishable container. It's from Mahabharata Draupadi. Of course, Draupadi didn't have to go out and beg money because the patra was akshaya by itself. It didn't. So there is a difference there. Madhu Pandit dreamed up this idea. And it was later taken up by various, what we might call standard ISKCON centers in India, under the title Midday Meals. And the idea is to feed children, I think mostly at government school, maybe non-government schools also, I don't know that much about it. I think mostly government schools, isn't it? To provide them with midday meals. And this is, the proponents of this program say that Srila Prabhupada said that no one within 10 miles of our temple should go hungry. This program has garnered tremendous appreciation from various quarters. People seem to like our movement much more than they did before. And, you know, they give us land and all kinds of things. It's said that people who wouldn't give for regular ISKCON projects, they'll give for this. So these are some of the benefits which are mentioned. So many people are getting prasadam, even non-Hindus, so that's the claim for the benefits of the midday meals program. Now, I want to give some background on this because, like I said, why am I against it? Well, I'm claiming that my attitudes are the same attitudes as that when I joined ISKCON. Because when I joined ISKCON, I had faith that what we were taught is what Srila Prabhupada wanted, and that we should do what Prabhupada said. And I've stayed with the same attitudes over all these years. Now, shortly after Srila Prabhupada left this world, There was a body formed by some devotees in America, within ISKCON, which was first of all called ISKCON Public Relations, I believe it was called. But soon they changed the name to ISKCON Communications. I guess because public relations gives the idea that you're doing what's nowadays, you won't understand what this means, but if you lived in America or Britain, you would know. It's a spin job. In other words, it's publicity to make others people think good about you, even though it's not so good. And all, you know, big people like presidents of countries, they all have their experts with them who help them to present to the world. Just like, you know, why, it might be asked, are American troops in Afghanistan? Well, you need someone to think up some story apart from the real one, because the real one doesn't sound so good. So that's the kind of thing that public relations does. It's meant for misleading people. It gives the impression it's not quite honest. So then the title was changed to ISKCON Communications, which sounds a lot more honest. Communications, like, you know, we just want to tell you what we're doing. Like, when we're just being open here. So the title was changed to ISKCON Communications. Now, two of the major initiatives of the ISKCON Public Relations, it was formed very shortly after Prabhupada left, was about maybe 1978 or 79. Two of the things they did was to start the ISKCON World Review and to start the Food for Life program, which many devotees think was, it's often stated that Prabhupada started it. Srila Prabhupada had a program called ISKCON Food Relief, actually, which was, seems specifically in Mayapur. I don't know if it was ever anywhere else, and that was for giving prasadam to the many Bangladeshi refugees who had flooded over to that area of India at that time. So Food for Life was started, and within the ISKCON World Review, it was weekly or fortnightly newspaper which gave news of ISKCON activities all over the world. But it also sought to change the whole ethos of ISKCON. In one of the early editions, I remember reading this and I tried to find the copy in which it's printed, but I couldn't find it. But I remember reading about, in the ISKCON World Review, they gave the idea of the Salvation Army, you said, because ISKCON at that time was quite unpopular, it seemed, especially in America. There was a lot of bad publicity, which it seems was largely due to our aggressive book distribution, which Srila Prabhupada, he wasn't against that, but it seemed to have created a lot of opposition, especially what was seen as the cheating tactics of the devotees in what's called the change-up, that the devotee would ask, could you give a big note and I'll give... When someone agreed to buy a book, they'd say, well, can you give a big note and I'll give you change, because I have so much change. And then, so someone would give $100, and then devotee would slowly give $10, $20, he'd come down to 50 and say, hey, you know, you're a very generous person, aren't you? I think that's okay. You know, the person was maybe only wanting to give $10, and by some kind of trickery of being very forceful, like almost forcefully, they'd take a lot more money from them. And they'd give them extra books also, but people didn't like that at all. And in many ways, I mean, our movement was considered very strange, with the people going out and singing in the street. The world is much more cosmopolitan nowadays. In those days, if you didn't wear your hairstyles short back, and you know, there was one hairstyle for all men. If you didn't wear your hair like that, you were considered something wrong with you. So what to speak about singing in the streets. Nowadays people like it. Attitudes have changed, but many people like it. So our movement was quite unpopular. There were all kinds of accusations in the press about us being a cult, brainwashing people. So the ISKCON communications sought to change the image of ISKCON in the public eye. And they gave the example of the Salvation Army, which is a not very prominent Christian sect, which was founded in England in the 19th century. And what they did was, the Salvation Army, they would dress in quasi-military uniforms and go into public places and play music and sing songs, hymns, songs about God. And they got all kinds of bad publicity. People thought they were stupid. They're not doing anything. They're just otherworldly. They're not doing anything practical for human society. They should go out and get a job and do some work. And they were quite unpopular. So perceiving this, the leaders of the Salvation Army, they decided, okay, let's change our tactics here. Let's do some welfare work, and then people will like us. So it's true, their whole image changed, and people, their attitude toward the Salvation Army became much more favorable, and they started helping the poor, having shelters for poor people and things like that. The only problem is, which wasn't mentioned in the ISKCON World Review, is that you don't see the Salvation Army on the streets anymore singing their songs. Actually, I remember seeing them maybe once in my childhood. And if anyone at all thinks of the Salvation Army, which they hardly do at all because they're not a very significant sect, they think of them in terms of the charitable work they do. So they became better liked, but they lost their whole mission. I mean, they still have the mission of converting people to Christianity, but their focus changed drastically. So it was a good example if you consider that we also, our dharma is to go out in public places, sing the holy names, dress in unusual clothes. It's very similar in many ways. But the point that they lost their the Salvation Army lost their whole initial approach and attitude, and they became less of a proselytizing movement than a mundane welfare movement. That wasn't mentioned in the ISKCON World Review. In the ISKCON World Review was also quite bold in introducing within their pages, and it was sent free to all the temples, so everyone got to see it. And there was news, so people like to see news, you know, Rathiatra in this country, new temple opened in this place. But mixed up with that was, they had an agenda to change ISKCON, and there were things like that, for instance, reviews of cassettes made by ISKCON devotees. And I remember reading one of them that the guitar style is Hendrixian. You don't know. Those of you who are from the West can understand. It's in the style of Jimi Hendrix, who is some famous demoniac, actually very demoniac person. He made one album showing on the cover art, showed a picture of the universal form, but instead of having Vishnu's head in the center, it had his head. And then he had another one with all naked women on the front. You know that one? Electric Lady. Anyway. So, and then he died young of, he'd taken illicit drugs and alcohol. He was lying down asleep and he vomited and choked on his vomit. That's how he died. So it's praising this music by this devotee as being, you know, reminiscent of Jimi Hendrix. That's supposed to be a compliment. And there were like book reviews of secular or semi-secular books. So it's quite bold in that regard, and in that it brought in what we would not have dreamed of before. Of I remember, actually, I didn't think about this for years. I was just a new devotee. I wasn't a new devotee. I was newly in the movement, and I asked one of the devotees that, you know, well, among all these rock groups and this and that, maybe some are like in the mode of goodness. And he said, no, they're all demoniac. That was my misconception in the early days. So that was the proper understanding, actually. There's rock groups are all demoniac. But now there was this, you know, promoting rock music within ISKCON. It was very bold in those days. Promoting that we should interact with different groups like animal rights groups, and he would give news not only of ISKCON activities but of different people who are promoting reincarnation and all this and that. So it sought to make our movement accepted as part of normal society, and that devotees, they can be thought of as, you know, normal people with normal interests to a large extent. And which was quite different as, well, I see it, and it seems to me to be axiomatic that it was quite different to the whole ethos that Srila Prabhupada introduced, that we want to change society. We're opposed to this whole demoniac way of life. So it was more like becoming accepted by society on the terms of modern society by becoming or accepting many of the attitudes within it, and particularly by performing welfare activities, bodily welfare activities, and particularly prasadam distribution, which of course prasadam distribution is very good. Prabhupada wanted that very much, but promoting prasadam distribution in a manner that it's seen by the public as welfare activities for hungry people, for needy people, as it said. So that's the background of how, this is the background for pretty much all I'm going to speak about, how attitudes in ISKCON have changed. They were deliberately changed. Now, you may say, well, what's wrong with the midday meals program? Srila Prabhupada said no one should go hungry within 10 miles of our center. Any ISKCON center. Well, I propose that no, in the places that we're distributing prasad, no one is going hungry anyway. If in Bombay, Bangalore, Delhi, they're not going hungry. There are people who are poor, relatively poor, but no one is starving in the cities. What happens is that many people from poor families, they don't want to send their children to school because they think, well, they could go to work. We could immediately get some money from them if they're working, like, you know, in a mechanic shop or a restaurant, or, you know, cheap dhaba, something like this. But if I send them to school, not only do they not bring any income, but We have to feed them also, as if they're working in a cafe or something, they'll get some food there. So the government's initiative to give schooling to all children was being undermined by the fact that many parents didn't want to send their children. They wanted them to work from a young age, which means there's also child labor, which everyone's against. People in general are against child labor. They think it's simply exploitation, and the children should be at school so they can have a better future. Interestingly, no one complains when children appear in advertisements, which is also child labor, or when they appear in movies. They're required for parts in some of them, they become famous child actors. That's also child labor. But no one complains about that, because they like to go to movies, I guess. And without the kids to play the part, then how could it be? So, the midday meals is promoted. That you see with... So, actually, no one... people aren't going hungry anyway. I mean, everyone... It's not that people are starving. And if we provide meals to hungry people, not to poorer class people, then they'll spend the money on something else like drink or cigarettes or payment on their TV set or whatever. So Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada said different things at different times. He didn't want, there is one quote in which he said that simply feeding the poor is nonsense. There should also be kirtan and some discussion of philosophy. If we only give food to the poor, Prabhupada said that's nonsense, because he didn't want, it's quite clear from his letters that Srila Prabhupada didn't want to promote ISKCON as being a social welfare movement in the way that it's generally considered by mundane people. Although sometimes he did say that, you know, distribute prasad and that people will appreciate that, but it was never something that he promoted so much. Whereas nowadays people they join ISKCON and they think that in some centers it's like the main activity. They don't have book distribution hardly at all, but they have the midday meals, and the devotees are sent to go out and collect for midday meals, not to distribute books or do Harinam as their main service. The advertising for the midday meals program, if you see their brochures or whatever, is that you see we're helping to build a nation that appeals to people. That we're building, but it goes, we're helping to build the nation by getting the children educated, we're giving children a good future. But that's completely against our philosophy. The idea of building the nation is totally mundane. The idea that we will build the nation by having more people educated so they can become lawyers, doctors, engineers, or more likely become factory workers. It's also the idea that we're helping people to improve, children to improve their life. And that's also mundane. I mean, the idea that they can improve their life in a mundane way, in a material way, is itself mundane. And that we want to help develop the present modern society, but that wasn't Prabhupada's program at all. His social welfare program was to develop varnashram communities where people don't have to live in this demoniac society. That was Prabhupada's welfare program. It wasn't that Prabhupada was callous to social welfare, but he wanted to do so through varnashram and varnashram education, that people would be educated according to their role in varnashram. So the advertising for midday meals is mundane. Yeah, mundane males. And you may say, well, it's just to induce people to give a donation for it. But the problem is that when we start talking like this, and people go out and speak to the pub, they go and meet businessmen and we tell them, look, we're helping hungry children, we're building up the nation. And if you keep on repeating it and saying it again and again and again, you start to think like that yourself. And instead of following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's order, Jare Deko Tare Koha Krishna Upadesh, you're going and talking to people about mundane things. So it sets, it changes the whole atmosphere of ISKCON. Now there's also one, you could say, very successful program is in the Vrindavan area called the Sandipani Muni schools. They started one school, now they're starting three or four schools. It's not officially under ISKCON, but it's run by a devotee who is a member of ISKCON or something like that. He's initiated by Shivaram Maharaj. He works with that. He doesn't like Shivaram Maharaj, it seems. But many ISKCON leaders promote that. It's doing very good, giving education to children in the Vrindavan area. And collection is promoted by many ISKCON leaders for this project. Recently I was at a center in Canada, and I came out of the main temple hall after the lecture and saw there was a stall promoting this on the Sunday program, taking donations from the people attending. And I saw the brochure, which was meant for eliciting donations, and I took exception with that. I had a bit of an argument with the person who was promoting that program. Because the brochure had the heading was "I am powerful," and this was the message that Sushmita Sen, who's a Bollywood actress, which, if we are to speak frankly, and in the language that Prabhupada used, which is not at all appreciated within ISKCON today, but she's just a prostitute, to put it straightforwardly. So she had come to the school, and her message to the children, to the girls especially, was that you should think, I am powerful, I can change the world. But you get an education and you can change the world. It's totally mundane feminism, and as I told this person, devotee or whatever, who is collecting for that, this is not Bhagavad Gita philosophy, this is Hiranyakashipu philosophy. I am powerful, I can change the world. So he said, well, you have to see, they're making them devotees. But what devotees with this kind of attitude? The devotee doesn't think, I am powerful, I can change the world. This is, like I say, Hiranyakashipu philosophy. Kartaham, I am the doer. So this is, I'm just giving an actual example of how, in the name of distributing prasad, and then he started off with distributing prasad to the poor people, then he got into other kinds of welfare work, and this is willingly promoted within our society as something very good. And it was mentioned that Sonia Gandhi, I believe, came to the opening of one of their schools. She came, and someone noted that, you see, what a great thing, you got Sonia Gandhi to come. She never came to any ISKCON center. Actually, she didn't. She just came there. She didn't visit any of the... Prabhupada said that about this Dr. Radhakrishnan. Was it Radhakrishnan or Nehru? I believe it was Nehru. Her grandfather-in-law. who came to Vrindavan. Prabhupada said he was such a rascal. He came to Vrindavan for the opening of the Ramakrishna Mission Hospital, and he never visited any of the temples. He just went back to Delhi. So Sonia Gandhi, can you see what a great thing she came to visit? But you say, well, none of our temples. She'd never come to any of our temples if she came to that. Well, that just shows where she's at. Because she wouldn't come to any of our temples because she's another... maybe I shouldn't say this, as this will go on the internet. You can fill in the blank lines yourself. She is, after all, a powerful person. And it's... I don't want to make trouble unnecessarily for members of our movement by making statements that might not be appreciated by persons who have the capacity to make trouble for others. So the point, yes, you see that people are supporting and they like it and they give huge money, but it's support, yes, but it's for the wrong reasons. About Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, it was said that this is stated in Saraswati Jayashri. Anyway, I've also noted in this book, Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav, that certain person said about him that if he would have just changed his message a little bit and just had made some compromise, then all the Vaishnavas of Bengal would have followed him. There was no need for him to fight with everyone. If he just adjusted himself a little bit to them, everyone would appreciate him. And even many people who were opposing him, they would accept him as their leader. But he didn't. He remained Bhakti Siddhanta, not Karma Siddhanta. Bhakti Siddhanta. And we bow our head at his lotus feet and thank Krishna for sending him, for being Bhakti Siddhanta and not Karma Siddhanta. There are so many who are promoting Karma Siddhanta. And who promotes this will be popular and liked, but they won't be Bhakti Siddhanta. So, we are getting support, and well, that helps us. We get permission for, if people are favorable to us, then we get permission for building temples, having festivals. But as I see it, it's something like happiness in the mode of passion. In the beginning, it looks very good, but after some time, you find that the result is just the opposite of what you thought it would be. That we saw in the 1980s, when in many parts of the world our devotees stopped doing book distribution and they started selling paintings and all kinds of different things, which were much easier to sell than books. Because if you give people a book which is about giving up sense gratification, who wants to buy a book about that? But if you give them sense gratification, then they'll buy it much more easily. So with the same effort, you get a lot more money. And with that money, you can give away books. And you can build big temples, which happened. You know, you never stopped distributing books, right? Through all of that. You were there in that time. And they buy big buildings, but in the end, because the devotees were not getting any spiritual taste by going out and telling people, here's the most popular paintings were paintings of dogs. So by saying, oh, this is a nice painting of a dog, by glorifying dogs instead of glorifying God, naturally, they were told, you see, we're doing it for Krishna. But they lost their taste and they thought, well, why don't I am doing it for Krishna? I'm doing it for what? I can do it for myself. So they got big castles, and all those big castles nowadays are empty because there was no spiritual basis. So in the same way, if we're all the time talking about building the nation, feeding the poor, I am powerful, I can change the world, we're not going to get the spiritual taste. And It won't be Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness won't spread, and we'll talk and think and act as welfare workers, and we'll become bodily welfare workers. Just like, for instance, some time ago, I came to know, we weren't told about it, but I came to know through the backdoor method that, I had requested permission from the regional secretary or whatever they're called, local GBC, for one area, that there's no preaching going on in this town. We have no ISKCON center there. We'd like to send some devotees there to do some preaching. He said, oh no, actually there's something going on there already. So what we came to find out is that what was going on, there'd been a flood in that area recently, and our devotees had been there during the flood, and they were distributing packets of biscuits and what else, blankets and things like that. So why they should distribute biscuits, which is kami food, and you know, it's just sinful food. And if you can distribute some prasada. And then after it has subsided with so many houses destroyed, someone in America wanted to give a huge donation for building houses for all the people who, at least some of the people who had lost their houses. And he wanted to give it to ISKCON because he thought he can trust ISKCON to do a good job. So from doing food relief and then flood relief, and now they're building houses and just getting more and more entangled, because people think, well, that's what ISKCON does. Very good. They do a very good job. And so the energy of our devotees is diverted more and more into these activities. And people think, well, it makes us popular, but we lose our whole mission. We lose our soul. So we couldn't go there to preach because they were building houses for the homeless people. This statement of Srila Prabhupada that giving only food to is nonsense. There should be kirtan and katha, and so tell them some philosophy also. But this midday meal things was, this came up for discussion, that isn't this mundane welfare work, is it like we're imitating the Ram Krishna mission or something like that? So, and in the end it was decided by the ICC or something like that, regional, RGB, regional governing body, the administrative umbrella body of ISKCON in India, that this this midday meal program could go on, but it should, with every distribution of prasad, there should be kirtan and some speaking. But here's the catch, that you, because of this secularism in India, you can go and distribute, but you can't do kirtan and katha. So the very condition which they said to make it allowable isn't allowed. And when you advertise, you can't advertise that it's prasadam. You have to say that it's food, we're feeding the poor. Now, about prasadam, and that question comes up also, because I'm not sure if in all places those who are cooking are actually devotees, because, you know, where are so many, in many places we have difficulty even having devotees to cook for the within the temples, what to speak of huge capacity outside. And there's the principle, ye yata mang prabhadyante tangsta taiva pajami aham. Krishna reciprocates, right? So, I just wonder how much love and devotion goes into this mechanized process of cooking, because the midday meals are cooking for thousands of people, and it's all done by a mechanized process where you put in, the amount is measured by machine, how much rice, how much dal, how much water, press a button, and then take it all out after, or it all goes, it's all computerized, and then it's packaged. It's the whole process is very machine-like, and it's just dropped off at the school by, in many cases, I think in almost all cases, by people who are not devotees. They're paid to do a job. So I just wonder, you know, prasadam, and the whole aim is anyway to, you know, the idea of feeding so we can develop the nation. I mean, does Krishna accept that? I wonder, you know, is Krishna obliged to accept it because we call it prasad? We have to call it prasadam? And that statement's going to get a lot of flack. So, it used to be in ISKCON that people would say to us, why don't you do social work? Why don't you build hospitals? Why don't you feed the poor? Well, nowadays, folks, we can say, we do, or they already know that we do. Here, I'm going to read from The Science of Self-Realization, just to give, it's quite shocking, actually, you might think, that Srila Prabhupada's response about, this is about specific instance where Srila Prabhupada was asked to perform social welfare work in what appeared to be a very worthy cause. This is, there was a letter came from the secretary of the Andhra Pradesh Relief Fund Committee, who wrote to Srila Prabhupada. It was during, there'd been a drought throughout Andhra Pradesh. So the secretary of the Andhra Pradesh Relief Fund Committee wrote to Srila Prabhupada, revered Swamiji, the residents of the Twin Cities, that means Hyderabad and Secunderabad, are happy to have this opportunity to meet you and your esteemed followers. You may be aware that due to inadequate rainfall during the last 2 years and its complete failure this year, more than half our state, that's Andhra Pradesh, is in the grip of a serious drought. With a view to supplement governmental efforts to combat this evil, a central voluntary organization of citizens drawn from various walks of life has been set up. The members of this organization surveyed the areas affected by drought. The situation is pathetic. There are villages where drinking water is not available for miles. Due to scarcity of fodder, the cattle owners are parting with their cattle for a nominal price. Many of the stray cattle are dying away due to unavailability of fodder and water. The food problem is also very serious. Due to high prices of food grains on the open market, purchase of grains at market prices is beyond the reach of poor villagers, with the result that at least 5 to 6 million people are hardly having one meal a day. There are many who are on the verge of starvation. The entire situation is most pathetic and heartrending. We therefore appeal to your revered self to consider how your society could best come to the rescue of these millions of souls who are in unimaginable distress. The committee would like to suggest that members of your society appeal to the bhaktas attending your discourses to contribute their mite to the Andhra Pradesh Relief Fund. The committee is prepared to send some of its representatives along with members of your society wherever you wish to distribute prasad to the hungry millions in the state. As Manava Seva is Madhava Seva, service to man is service to God, the committee is confident that even a little effort by your gracious society will go a long way in mitigating the sufferings of hundreds and thousands of people. Yours ever in the service of the Lord, T.L. Katidia, Secretary, Andhra Pradesh Relief Fund Committee, Hyderabad, India. So it's very respectfully written about, as he's stated, a pathetic and heartrending situation. The specific thing he asked for was that Srila Prabhupada at that time was giving public lectures in Hyderabad, and that after the lecture, that a request be made to the people in attendance to give a donation for the Andhra Pradesh Relief Fund Committee. That's all he asked for. He also suggested that members, that if ISKCON wanted to send some members, the committee would assist them if they wanted to go out into the afflicted areas and distribute prasadam. So that's the request. Srila Prabhupada's reply. My dear Mr. Kathidia, please accept my greetings. With reference to your letter and your personal interview, I beg to inform you that without pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, no one can become happy. Unfortunately, people do not know who God is and how to make Him happy. Our Krishna consciousness movement is therefore meant to present the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly to the people. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, 6th chapter, Tushte cha tatra kim alabhyam ananta adye king tayaguna vyatikarad iha ye svasid ha ha. The idea stated in this verse is that by pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we please everyone and there is no question of scarcity. Because people do not know the secret of success, they are making their own independent plans to be happy. However, it is not possible to achieve happiness in this way. On your letterhead, I find many important men in this country who are interested in relieving the sufferings of the people, but they should know for certain that without pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all their attempts will be futile. A diseased man cannot live simply on the strength of the help of an expert physician and medicine. If this were so, then no rich man would ever die. One must be favored by Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, if you want to perform relief work simply by collecting funds, I think that it will not be successful. You have to please the Supreme Authority, and that is the way to success. For example, due to the performance of Sankirtan here, the rain has begun to fall after a drought of 2 years. The last time we performed a Hare Krishna festival in Delhi, there was imminent danger of Pakistan's declaring war, and when a newspaper man approached me for my opinion, I said there must be fighting because the other party was aggressive. However, because of our Sankirtan movement, India emerged victorious. Similarly, when we held a festival in Calcutta, the Naxalite movement stopped. These are facts. Through the Sankirtan movement, we can not only get all facilities for living, but also at the end go back home, back to Godhead. Those who are of a demonic nature cannot understand this, but it is a fact. I therefore request you as leading members of society to join this movement. There is no loss on anyone's part for chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, but the gain is great. According to Bhagavad Gita, what is accepted by leading men is also accepted by common men. Yad yad acharati shreshthas. Tat tad evetaro janaha sayat pramanang kurute lokastad anuvartate. Whatever action a great man performs, common men follow in his footsteps. And whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. The Sankirtan movement of Krishna consciousness is very important. Therefore, through you, I wish to appeal to all the leading men of India to accept this movement very seriously and give us all facility to spread this movement throughout the world. Then there will be a very happy condition, not only in India, but all over the world. Hoping this will meet you in good health, your ever well-wisher, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. So, Srila Prabhupada refused the request to take a collection for the Andhra Pradesh Relief Fund. Even though that committee was composed of all very big important people who certainly would have become much more favorable, Prabhupada said that their attempt he used the word demoniac. He didn't directly say they're demoniac, but the implication is clear. that if you don't accept what I'm telling you, that you should, instead of asking us to help you, you should all come and join us. And if you don't accept this, that's because you have a demoniac nature. That was Srila Prabhupada's response. So, now, undoubtedly, he could have got, you know, all kinds of help from these people, that they would have asked, being the leading men of the state and of India, they would have, yes, please come, open your center. But Prabhupada replied in a manner that asked them to join him, but knowing that they're not likely to join him, but likely to not support him or not think of him favorably. But Prabhupada, that was his stance. He didn't think that we should become, or even help people in that way, even though they were suffering. You could say it was a much more valid case, you could say, than the midday meals program. But Srila Prabhupada refused to do so. I'd like to now read some quotes from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur that I have included in the book Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhava. The thousands of karmis who have opened innumerable hospitals, old age homes, centers for the poor, and schools, and the thousands of gyanis who have undergone meditation and severe austerities are insignificant compared to a single Kanishtha Adhikari Vaishnava once ringing the bell before the Lord's deity. This is not sectarianism, but plain truth. Atheists are wholly incapable of realizing this. Thus, they become either direct or indirect blasphemers of devotional service or adherents to the doctrine of harmonistic all-inclusiveness. So, the idea that we're helping people by opening hospitals. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that innumerable hospitals, opening of innumerable hospitals by karmis is not even comparable to a Kanishtha Adhikari Vaishnava once ringing the bell before the deity. So in other words, stating that the categorical difference between devotional service and bodily welfare work. Now it may be objected that, well, if devotees do bodily welfare work, then what's the harm? But the implication here is that devotees don't do that. They're not, it isn't their prime concern or even their secondary concern. Being averse to Lord Vishnu, this is another quote. Being averse to Lord Vishnu, countless jivas have come to Mahamaya's dungeon to envy Lord Vishnu in countless ways. To deliver even one of them from Mahamaya's fortress and make him a devotee of Krishna is unlimitedly better welfare work than the construction of countless hospitals and schools. So, bringing people to Krishna consciousness is obviously a lot more difficult than performing bodily welfare work, but it's far better also. People in general won't appreciate that. So it's easier to get appreciation for things that worldly people approve of, but then you become part of them. You partake of their way of thinking. You may say, well, we understand, we're devotees, we're doing it, but we're not the same as non-devotees. But I've given some examples of how it's very easy to become part of the ethos that you're supposed to be changing. It's like if you, the idea that, well, you become a little open to materialistic ideas, so that people will at least interrelate with you, and then gradually they can appreciate Krishna consciousness. But what I say, it often happens the other way, that you become like friendly, or you relate with people on their level, and our devotees tend to become more like non-devotees, and the non-devotees becoming like devotees, or the distinction becomes blurred. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur states, welfare work is good, but has two defects. It directly or indirectly encourages godlessness and supports violence to animals and other living entities. Directly or indirectly encourages godlessness. Yeah, the idea, you see, that we're promoting, that we're helping people by opening hospitals and schools. It supports the materialistic way of thinking. Directly or indirectly, it upholds the materialistic way of thinking that this world is the arena for our enjoyment independent of Krishna. And that the only real welfare for everyone is to surrender to Krishna. So if we tell people that, you see, we're helping people, you should donate because we're building hospitals and schools, then we are, by not informing them that the actual welfare work for all living beings is to surrender to Krishna, and encouraging them to act in a manner which they already agree with, but which is Maya, we're actually encouraging them to be in Maya. And by speaking like this among our own devotees, we're, instead of helping them to get free from Maya, we're keeping them in it. So these are some of the problems. Again, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Sri Chaitanya Dev preached throughout the world for the welfare of all jivas, yet the welfare work he proposed was not of the small-minded, paltry, stopgap, changeable, or imaginary pie-in-the-sky type, like that envisaged by so-called social reformers and mundane philanthropists. The welfare work he proposed is of the highest caliber, and neither temporary nor insignificant. The ways to uplift others, already invented, being invented, and about to be invented by ordinary human beings according to their narrow considerations, will in no way profit anyone because they are all makeshift. Sri Mahaprabhu revealed the actual means for elevating others. Vedyam Vastavamatra Vastu Shivadang Tapatrayon Mulanam. If you don't know what that means, you're not studying the books properly, because it's a well-known quote from from Srimad Bhagavatam. Distresses are the effect of a particular cause, and until the cause is terminated, the effect will remain. Unless the root of a banyan tree is destroyed, it will again sprout, even if one cuts down its trunk and branches thousands of times. The thousands of man-made proposals for social welfare are like an attempt to empty the ocean with one's bare hands. Even if thousands of people engage continuously in such an endeavor for thousands of yugas, they will never be successful. By doing so, they might cause a vast body of water to accumulate elsewhere. Similarly, we cannot empty the ocean of material suffering by our own strength. At most, we will simply succeed in transferring the problems elsewhere. Of course, by doing that, we can certainly deceive others and even ourselves. So this is the severe accusation. Who will dare to make such an accusation? That the bodily welfare work being carried out within ISKCON is deceiving others and ourselves. But actually it's deliberately meant to deceive others, that because the idea is that the unstated purpose is that actually we understand that bhakti is the highest, but people don't understand. So we'll engage them in this way. So it's meant to deceive them. But actually we deceive ourselves, because we start to, as I say, talk, act and think like a mundane person. We, instead of approaching people and telling them that Krishna consciousness is the solution to all problems, we meet them and say, please help with that. We're doing great work by feeding the poor, opening hospitals, and so on. So, another quote from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. There are so many. To have faith in the holy name is so very rare that we may leave it out of consideration. If we had faith even in Nama Bhas, the most dimly perceived name, we would never have said that succoring the victims of floods is better than kirtan and prachar, singing and preaching about God, or that freeing the country from famines or the opening of hospitals is better than preaching devotion to God. Hundreds of famines can be alleviated not only by Nama Bhas, but even by Nama Parad, offensive taking of the name. So, of course, no one in ISKCON is saying that opening hospitals is better than preaching devotion to God, but by their actions, they're saying, because it's a huge effort to set up a hospital. And setting up a hospital with the same endeavor and funds, one could promote the preaching of the holy name. Now, the idea of running hospitals by devotees and then people are in distress and then you preach to them, you look after them, and the employees are devotees. Well, maybe it's not a bad idea. We find there's a book by Srila Prabhupada called The Message of Godhead, in which he gives recommendations that factory owners can call their workers together to chant Hare Krishna and give them all prasadam. But as I understand it, that's for people who already have factories. It's not that Prabhupada's recommending you. People who are devotees invest their funds to set up factories so people can work in a factory and chant Hare Krishna. I mean, just like the Bhaktivedanta Hospital was set up spending huge amounts of money, which could have been used for... if you want to do social welfare work, why not do it the way that Prabhupada said, that set up Varnashram communities, which is an all-around solution. Seeing as I'm saying this, I'll say it here. I have some doubts about the Bhaktivedanta Hospital in as much as the money is collected for money. They keep on collecting money, and all they have devotees, like full time engaged in collection for it. I wonder, because so many hospitals are set up in India for profit, and then why is this one collecting funds all over the world? In America, I find that there are so many disciples of a certain guru within ISKCON who they all donate regularly to the Bhaktivedanta Hospital and eye camps and this and that, and they feel they're obligated to do so. But why? That's part of their devotional service. But why not donate for distributing books, setting up Varnashram community, directly activities that Prabhupada recommended, and directly devotional? You're bringing people to Prabhupada's movement and directing them to engage in some bodily welfare work. And how they're collecting so much money? The midday meals also. Devotee recently wrote to me who was connected with the congregation of a certain temple that runs this midday meals program. And he had been asked to canvass within his company for the sponsorship of the midday meals. So it seems that they're going on more and more widely, collecting more and more money. They could be collecting money, like I say, directly for Krishna consciousness, but they're engaging people who have come to Krishna consciousness in activities which are not Krishna conscious. I mean, they're not, they have to approach their company members and say, look, we're feeding the poor, we're building up the nation, we're helping poor children. They don't go and get money from them instead of instead of preaching to their company members, or instead of engaging them in raising funds for Krishna consciousness, they're engaged in raising funds they are engaged in collecting funds for bodily welfare work. That's what they do. I mean, that's what they say. They may have the understanding that actually it's all spiritual, but what they are engaged in, what they actually say and do, is that we are collecting funds to help people so they can get a better future, and we're helping to develop the nation like this. I don't know, I mean, there's so many things to say. Well, just one, at the Bhaktivedanta Hospital in Bombay, I have some objection. Srila Prabhupada, he objected that at the Yoga Pit in Mayapur, the temple of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birthplace, after Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's departure, one of his disciples made a temple honoring Bhaktivinoda Thakur at the entrance to the Yoga Pit, and Prabhupada said that he said that's disrespectful. They made him like the doorkeeper, so they might bear that in mind, that Prabhupada's murti is right there in the entrance. So Prabhupada didn't much approve of that. Oh, that thing about collecting funds. We always used to hear this, that that Madhu Pandit had set up the Akshay Patra program for fund collection. We don't hear about that so much, but he has become, of course, I guess it would be difficult to prove this, but he made this he's moving around huge amounts of money, and it's said that that money has largely been generated from the Akshay Patra program, that they say that it costs so much money to feed people, but actually one plate costs this much, but actually it costs less, and so they collect a lot more money than they need to for the actual food distribution, and in this way they're generating money. So there's definitely a lot of money floating around. And whether it's all going to Krishna conscious purposes or for the purpose that it's said to be collected for, I don't know. It's open to question. Eye camps, another thing that's collected for all over the world. Eye camps are held by devotees or members of ISKCON like once a year or something in Vrindavan, and they collect all year all over the world on the basis of that. I don't mind, but I don't know how it can cost so much money that they have to go on collecting and collecting and collecting in the name of eye camps. Once I was in Bahrain, and I was told that a certain a doctor who was a disciple of a certain guru in our movement, whose followers organized these eye camps, I was told that he'd recently moved to Bahrain. So then I met him, and the first thing he said to me was, "Oh, we've opened a new eye camp in Varshan." That was the first thing he said to me, that is what all his devotional aspirations are about. Not like we're distributing books, but we open a new eye camp. So I said to him, "Yeah, so all those people now they'll all be watching TV very nicely." And he laughed, and he had to agree. One of my disciples, who's a doctor, he went to one of those, he participated in one of those ICAMs once. He said he'd never do it again because he was serving free tea. He didn't agree with that. Along with the ICAM, they had free tea for everyone. So that's said to be serving Vrajvasis, but I don't, because it's done in the area of Vraja, but I don't, is that the way to serve Vrajvasis? Is to help them in the, to get, unless you give them spiritual uplift. I mean, we shouldn't be in this sentimental mood that everyone who's a Vrajavas, who's born in Vraja or lives in Vraja is a perfect pure devotee. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur certainly didn't agree with that. And by their activities, watching TV. And, one of my godbrothers who's lived in Vrindavan for many years, he's quite convinced, knowing. He sent me once a list of some of the really horrible things that he knew certain Vrajvasis were doing. So we could also work to uplift their character by the regular process of devotional service. I'm getting a bit all over the place here. Say the Bhaktivedanta Hospital, it's serving devotees. A leading devotee at ISKCON in Juhu in Bombay told me that there's free treatment at the Bhaktivedanta Hospital for devotees, but only from Chopati, Pune, not for Juhu devotees. He said, why the sectarianism? I don't know if that's changed now. He told me that about 2 years ago. He said, we send our devotees to other hospitals where they, non-devotee hospitals where they treat us free. But I went to the Bhaktivedanta Hospital for a checkup once. They charged me 2,000 rupees and something. That was years ago. And then after that, I went did checkups in other hospitals. And again, they treat me free. So maybe they're under the maybe people donate. They're under the impression that devotees are treated free. Well, some of them. So. Like this midday meals and Bhaktivedanta Hospital, ICAMs, it's a bit nebulous because it's not being run in the name of ISKCON. So if anyone brings up any criticism, they say, well, it's not ISKCON. But everyone relates with it as being ISKCON. And like I say, people, due to their relationship with ISKCON, they're expected to donate for it or to offer to solicit donations for it. And we may say, well, that's just something on the side that some of our congregation are doing, but it's entered the ISKCON culture. And recently I saw brochures for two ISKCON projects for building temples in India, in which in both of them they included, along with the temple, hospital, school, old age home, as if it's, something that, that's what ISKCON does. The temple, there was like one paragraph about the temple, and then the rest of the brochure is about the hospital, the school. School doesn't mean Gurukul, it means teaching mundane subjects. So it's entered our culture. People think that, that's, our own devotees think, well, that's what ISKCON does. Have a temple, then you have to have a hospital. In one center, one devotee told me he was under tremendous pressure to start midday meals and he didn't want to do it. So I'm not the only one who's against this. He didn't want to do it, but he was under tremendous pressure because he thought, it's what ISKCON does. Why don't you do it? So in this one, like I said, in that brochure, there was a small bit about the temple and all the rest was about old age home, and hospital, and so you see that the directly spiritual part about the temple is gradually becoming less and less, and then the hospital becomes the main thing. Like with the Salvation Army, their directly religious activities have become less and less and less because it's much easier to go along with what people like rather than some higher ideal. So like this, schools and colleges, as Srila Prabhupada is very clearly against mundane education, which is why he set up Gurukuls. But then, nowadays school in ISKCON, they proudly announce that our school is affiliated with the Cambridge Board, and we have in Mayapur.
And one basketball competition.
Yeah, I tell you that. No, I tell you, I told you that. I was, that's coming up. We're proud to announce that our school is affiliated with the Cambridge Board. Why? Pride. That's in Mayapur. Right? People come to Mayapur and instead of getting education in Srimad Bhagavatam, they get education in how to be another mudha, member of modern society. Oh, and they have little kirtan. In the beginning and in the end, maybe. But the curriculum is mundane. Yeah, a few years ago, when I was visiting ISKCON Vrindavan, after the Mangal Arati, the vice president made some announcements. One of the announcements he made was that our school basketball team has reached the semi-final of the UP state championships. So we were all supposed to be, I don't know, we're supposed to be enlivened by that. That this is not what Srila Prabhupada gave his blood to go to the West and preach so that we develop schools in Vrindavan for such mundane things. It's all the worst. I mean, it's bad enough anywhere, but in Vrindavan, it's where we should be encouraging the spiritual culture. It's a completely mundane. Now the idea is that, well, you see, people, they like us, and but not necessarily, because after all, pretty much every Hindu organization in India runs some schools, and so, you know, people don't particularly like us for that. Even the prasadam distribution, what it's called, that may not necessarily endear us to people. Some years in Armenia, which is a country in the former Soviet Union, devotees were distributing to the poor and needy for several years. They were distributing food for several years. And then one day there was a tremendous attack on our movement by some hoodlums, and they came to a temple and severely beat up the devotees. I was in Russia at the time. It came on the news in Russia on the TV. Devotees were covered in blood, and they smashed up the temple completely. And you would have thought that the people in general would have been supportive, have come out in support of us, because we'd done so much public welfare activity. But no one came out in our support, because, you know, Armenians have a very strong sense of national identity, and people didn't like that we were trying to introduce some new religion. So that practically our movement it never recovered from that, and we don't have any. We don't. Our movements, which was centered around food distribution to people from the poorer section of society, that was like the main thing, food for life. But our movement has never recovered from that attack. So I'm just saying that it's not necessarily true that we do gain public support. And it can become a liability, because people expect you to do it, and then if you don't do it, then If you don't keep up this, you become trapped in doing that. I know in Bombay they made that school, and now they wanted to stop it at some point, but then the parents of the children, they wouldn't allow it. They made so much protest. So now they have to go to all the trouble of collecting huge amounts of money and setting up a school elsewhere outside the temple compound, because they realize that it's of no benefit whatsoever to the temple and just takes up unnecessary space. And the children, they don't become devotees. After going through the whole school, because the education is not to make them devotees per se. So it's like a case of the story of you lose your caste and you're still hungry. That the brahmana, he begged food from a low caste person, because he was so hungry, and he lost his caste by doing so. But the low caste person who fed him could only give him a handful to eat. So he lost his caste and he remained hungry. So we think we're getting some advantage, but we become doubly disadvantaged. Now, I'm not against feeding the poor per se. I'm not totally against it. We shouldn't do it. But there are ways to do it which doesn't compromise our integrity. Just like, that's my claim, that the midday meals program, it compromises our integrity by promoting that, making fun, a whole sub-organization within the organization, collecting funds in the name of building up the nation, helping children to get a good future, which is actually against our philosophy, or the philosophy that Srila Prabhupada taught us. So examples of poor feeding programs that I'm speaking now, who am I? But anyway, whoever wants to listen, they can listen. That I think are very good. I'm pretty sure it's still going on. In Australia, I believe it was in Melbourne or Sydney, I can't remember, but every night they would, from the restaurant, whatever was left over, they have the restaurant at the temple, they would distribute it like 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock at night out the back of the temple, and destitute people would come and they'd give them prasada. So that's good. In Melbourne, at ISKCON, I'm told that they have a program that whoever comes to the temple, they get one all day long. They give them a full plate of prasadam. They don't ask them to give a donation. So that's very good. In Los Angeles, 3 or 4 times a week, they take the whatever's left over from the restaurant. They go down to one area of the town. They set up a table. People know they're coming at a certain time every time. So people who are destitute, they come, and while they distribute prasad, they do kirtan. It's very open. They're devotees and like this. So these are very good. There's also a program in London called Not Food for Life, called Hare Krishna Food for All. So it's just a little bit different name, but it gives a different connotation. Food for all instead of food for life. In other words, it's not just aimed at the poor, but it's meant for everyone. So they have a storefront, and it's like a free restaurant. And they're very openly devotees, and people come and they have kirtan and like this. So, I'm not fanatically against distributing prasadam to the poor, but of course, Srila Prabhupada also said that it should be distributed to everyone. Everyone is spiritually poor, so if we're going to distribute prasad, why marry that concept to that of poor feeding and make that a major initiative of our movement? Distribute prasadam widely to everyone. Everyone needs prasadam. It's not just the poor. Now, getting back to that, this specific question by which I came to narrate all these things today, that kshatriyas, one of their works is, one of their duties is activities for public welfare. That's true, but the midday meals program is not a kshatriya program. One of the main facets of being a kshatriya is that you never beg anything from anyone for any reason. Kshatriya never begs. He levies taxes which he uses for the welfare of the people. So, kshatriya welfare work, the kings, the leaders of the society, actual kshatriyas, are supposed to do that. They're not supposed to beg money. So if you're begging money from the public, yeah, that disqualifies you from being a kshatriya. So you can't say it's a kshatriya activity. Now, why then am I not in favor of this kshatriya project? Well, in concept, in the beginning I said yes, it's a good idea, but because it's following this midday meals track, I say that although the idea is theoretically good, the implementation is wrong. They haven't understood what the mission is. The kshatriyas are supposed to assist the brahmanas. So if the idea is like the kshatriyas are assisting the work of the main pure brahminical work of ISKCON by fighting law cases to help and this and that, but then this assumes that ISKCON is on track and the kshatriyas are helping. But my proposition, which is no doubt controversial, is that ISKCON isn't on track. So if you help that, you're not really helping anything. Srila Prabhupada always said about Varnashram that the first thing is to get the Brahmana order. And then the others can follow, because if the head is not in order, even if you have a healthy body, if the head is not in order, then the whole functioning becomes useless or disarranged. So still the need is there to get the head in order. Because I've given some examples and I'll give some more. The best is yet to come in this lecture. Of how things are not philosophically in order in our movement. So to assist the movement as it presently stands shows this, means that the Kshatriya initiative is not going to work. We're still at the stage of needing to get the Brahmana order in proper shape. So, like this midday meals thing, I've noted some serious reservations I have about it. But our leaders have approved this program. A presentation was made to the GBC about this year, and it was all approved. And at regional meetings, when it was in here in India, when it stated that, you know, distributing biscuits to the flood-stricken people and leaders, it was a leaders' meeting, and everyone's clapping. And so my contention is that the brahmanas need to be put in order. Let me say something else first. Now, some other examples, there are many, of how I perceive that our leaders are not properly situated in understanding and implementing Srila Prabhupada's teachings, is that in the famous incident 9/11, when the World Trade Center came tumbling down for whatever reason, said to be because of some airplanes flying into it, into two of the towers, and one of the towers just came down without any apparent reason. That there was a huge outpouring of public sympathy for the firemen, who were, many of them who were killed in trying to combat the fires within that building. So one of our GBC members, who was also a temple president, arranged from his temple community a collection to help the firemen, which, if you don't see the ambiguity in that with what Prabhupada's teachings are all about, then you, my dear friend, are a victim of the very syndrome that I'm talking about. Another example came on the internet quite a few years ago, maybe 9 or 10 years ago, a report of the first ISKCON golf championship, which was held in California on Gaur Purnima Day. And it gave a report. This is on the Chakra website, which you may remember was prominent in ISKCON at one point. So the report came up, and a report how there were several ex-temple presidents there, and we're very grateful that our one GBC member also came. He couldn't spend much time because he was quite busy, and but he played a few holes with us. So these are just some examples of how those who are the leaders seem to be very much misleading, or themselves not properly situated. Now, one job the kshatriyas are supposed to see that everyone follows their duties properly. So if the kshatriya initiative can get the, instead of going along with things that the leaders shouldn't be doing, is if they can get them to do what they should be doing, that would be a great job to rectify the rot within our society. I don't know how exactly kshatriyas are supposed to discipline brahmanas, and that would require some research, because they're not allowed to physically punish them. Maybe kshatriyas could withdraw their financial support or something. I don't know exactly how it would be done. And how it's to be done in the modern age also is within ISKCON, that's also. I mean, actually, it's establishing actual kshatriyas, it's difficult to think how that could be done in the modern age, because a kshatriya is a king. He's not the CEO or head of a department. He's a king. Which are not in a democratic society, that's not allowed to have kings. And any absolute dictator, they're subject to be invaded by America for having absolute, like it happened with Saddam Hussein. He was a king, you could say. Not so. Where there is absolute king-like rule. Well, the king of Saudi Arabia is still there. He's a king in the sense that he makes the law. But that's not considered very good in the modern age. How would you have kshatriyas in India or America, which are democratic countries? It requires some research, actually. I mean, or prayer to see how you could actually have kshatriyas. It's not just administrators, but administrators with power. And power comes from physical strength and fighting skills. That's the power. It's the power of force, of the power to punish. That's where the manifestation of Kshatriya power comes from. Ultimately, the power comes from Krishna. But anyway, if the Kshatriya's endeavor in ISKCON could be for getting it back on course, that would be good. So, there's no doubt that ISKCON has changed a lot. The ISKCON communications endeavor to change the movement has been successful. And, but again, it's a case of having lost your caste and remaining hungry, because in the basic activities of temple worship are going on, often in a very poor way to the standards that Prabhupada gave. Harinam Sankirtan is going on here and there, not much. In many places, book distribution is not much promoted. In the particular group that within India that very much promotes the hospital, midday meals, eye camps, and so on, there's not that much emphasis within their group on book distribution, although between them they do that also. But whereas previously our movement, as Prabhupada writes in one of his purports, our movement is centered on distribution of books. But when we think of that particular group within ISKCON, we're more likely to think of hospitals and midday meals and eye camps and distribution of books. So ISKCON has changed, and my contention is that it's become more mundane and it's getting worse. And we are inured to that. Inured means there's something bad, you get used to it, so that you just think that it's normal. Just like to give an example, this is just from less than a month ago. One of my disciples who's temporarily living in France with her husband there told me that in the course of a conversation with an initiated devotee there, she had said something disparaging about Sai Baba, at which this initiated devotee became extremely angry and he thought that she was very wrong in criticizing Sai Baba. Now, if at all we have studied Srila Prabhupada's books and tried to understand the mood of his preaching, then we can understand, or if we actually lived in ISKCON in the time when Srila Prabhupada was present, and for a few years after that, we should understand that for someone who's an initiated devotee within ISKCON to have any good opinion about Sai Baba means there's something seriously wrong. But maybe even more seriously wrong than that is that when I heard this, I wasn't in the slightest bit surprised. You see? I'm not bluffing. That we become so used to hearing about all these various deviations that we just think there's nothing extraordinary about it. Just like a few days previous to that incident, which happened in Croatia, this lady devotee telling me about her experiences with the initiated fan of Sai Baba, I mean the ISKCON initiated person who was a fan of Sai Baba, I gave a lecture in ISKCON in Zagreb, which is the capital of Croatia. And at the end of the lecture, a person who seemed he was a newcomer, seemed like he was coming for the first time, or seemed very new to our movement, he asked a question. He said, well, in my childhood I was abused, and he asked how to get over that. So afterward, Gokul Chandra Prabhu, who was present in that lecture, noted to me privately after the lecture that, you see, he said that I was abused in my childhood, and no one was surprised. It's become like a normal thing. Not that it's accepted as a good thing, but it's become so commonplace that if someone says, I was abused in my childhood, then people just, you know, they don't become surprised because they just think it's normal. In other words, something which is actually abominable, horrible, has become so common that no one's surprised and they think it's normal. So, if in our movement we're not surprised when someone tells us that an initiated devotee within ISKCON becomes angry when Sai Baba is criticized, you know, there's something... In human society, if child abuse is so common that it doesn't arouse any surprise, there's something seriously wrong in society. So similarly, in the ISKCON society, if people have favorable disposition towards Sai Baba, there's something seriously wrong. So that's the point I'm making there. And there are so many things like that, that years ago we would have been shocked, it would have been unthinkable within ISKCON, which are just normal nowadays. One thing which is very, very touchy, very sensitive, and people will get upset if, I guess some people will hear this on the internet. It's very sensitive because one of the most... there's a book written by one of the... Actually, it's ghostwritten, means it was written by someone else on his behalf. Written by one of the... probably the most popular leader within ISKCON today. Now, that book, I can't help thinking that if you'd shown it to Srila Prabhupada, he would not have been at all pleased. Because there are pictures of all these Mayavadis and mundane people, famous mundane welfare workers. And there are a few pictures of Prabhupada there also. And it describes how he met all these different mundane people. And there's not a bad word about any of them. The people that Prabhupada, if he spoke about them at all, would criticize them. And speaks about how he met Prabhupada. And it doesn't really say that Prabhupada's, you know... I thought it was going to come to... I read the book and I thought it was very well written by the woman who was paid to write it. Very readable. So I thought we were going to get to the point, and I met Prabhupada, and Prabhupada opened my eyes, and he made me realize that all these people were rascals and cheaters, which is the word that Prabhupada regularly used for them. But no such thing. It's just like in each time he'd go to one guru, and then he'd realize this is not my path, and then he realizes when he met Prabhupada, actually sometime later, that this is my path. In other words, everyone has their path, and this is my path, and there are all the different paths, and you can choose this path or that path or any other path. And at the end of the book, he says that now, having come to Prabhupada, now I'm engaged in helping with hospitals and feeding children and eye camps. In other words, the message is that what he got from Prabhupada was to have hospitals, eye camps, and feeding people. And the message to his followers is that this is what he's... that's his life. That's what is central to his life. So, as I see it, there are serious problems with that. And serious problems with that, you know, from that group. Then they were never as enthusiastic to distribute Prabhupada's books as they are to distribute this book, which even if anyone read that book for hundreds of thousands of times, they'd never even get the idea that you're supposed to surrender to Krishna. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The purpose of life is to surrender to Krishna. They'd never even get the idea. One godbrother told me that he started reading it, but he stopped when he came to the erotic part. As another godbrother, told me that his feeling was that some erotic or almost erotic scenes, that it's not the duty of a sannyasi to write about such things. So I see there's another example. I mean, I just can't imagine what Prabhupada's response would have been if he saw that book. But our movement has changed. It's not for the better. And if we start to talk about it, there could be so many things. I mean, another of my GPC God brothers told me that ISKCON Mayapur is run by a mafia, and he gave an example of how he had to pay a bribe to the devotee who was supposed to do some official work for him, and he complained to one of the leaders of ISKCON Mayapur, who just said, how much did he ask from you? And he told the amount, and then he pulled out and said, here, give him the... He knew the mafia was going on, but he was just supportive of it, that's all. So, nowadays, at the present time in India, there's a huge outcry against government corruption. And although it would be very difficult to prove, I'm fairly sure that there's a lot of corruption going on in ISKCON India also, because the leaders are not, they're just given a free hand, and the whole, there's not any close checking of them, and the whole culture of the country is riddled with corruption. So do we just presume that everyone who comes to ISKCON is a complete saint and they have all this money coming in, and what's going on? Like I say, it's difficult to prove, but there are serious grounds to consider that. Especially when we see that in many temples, they're interested in collection, so much so that in many temples of ISKCON in India, preacher means someone who goes out and collects money. It doesn't mean someone who tries to get people to change their life and surrender to Krishna. And in fact, we see in many temples, they don't seem to be even slightly concerned about preaching to people to surrender and give their life to Krishna. And if anyone does that, they object to that, because it disturbs their whole ongoing business. So, and there are so many things. In many cases, when devotees have problems, they're more likely to be counseled on the basis of mundane psychology than by reference to Shastra. One thing that Srila Prabhupada he wrote, that I'm very afraid that after I leave, the deity worship standard will be diminished. But it is. It's become accepted within our society. People who join, they don't even know that you're supposed to be a Brahmin initiated devotee to worship the deity. They never heard of such a thing. And they make make their own reasoning that, well, bhakti is the main thing, Brahmin initiation isn't important. So the standards have in many cases very much diminished. So that's a serious problem. Recently when I was in America, a temple president told me that most of the newcomers to our movement nowadays, they don't read Srila Prabhupada's books. They're not encouraged to do so. And actually, they don't like to, because Prabhupada's books, what's said in Prabhupada's books is not what's preached within the movement, and people don't like to hear so many things that are in Prabhupada's books. For instance, that women are less intelligent than men. To say that is practically banned in ISKCON now, although it's a point that Srila Prabhupada makes many times. Of course, that point in particular should be understood very carefully and not used as a stick to bash women, but at the same time, it is a point that Prabhupada made many times. So people don't like to read Prabhupada's books because our devotees don't believe in what's in them, and they don't want to speak on these things because, well, I don't know why. I guess they don't believe what Prabhupada says. In some places, the the idea is that it's openly promoted that, well, Prabhupada's books, they're too difficult to understand, so we have other books by other people, by other members of ISKCON. Better you give these to people, and they can understand them more easily. And there's a whole big sub-movement going on within ISKCON in India in which they're not allowed to read. Actually, there are two of them. There are two of going on under two groups. I mean, it means a lot of people are being brought into ISKCON being told that they're not allowed to read Prabhupada's books until they get permission. They have to read other books, and they distribute these other books. So I'm not saying that other books are necessarily wrong, but to say that to say that you shouldn't read Prabhupada's books, I just can't imagine. It's just unimaginable what Prabhupada, you know, how angry Prabhupada would be. But I guess they don't care. Yeah. Some devotees from here recently visited one of these temples which is supposed to be preaching and very successful, making many new members, which is the center of this movement, that you have to read other books and not Prabhupada's books. And they saw in the bookstall there weren't Prabhupada's books. And they asked, and there were just all kinds of books. And then they asked for Prabhupada's books. They had to look around, and there were just one or two hidden away somewhere. So those devotees were going there. There was, because this center offers training in how to preach. So they were going there for that, and then they just left. They don't want this kind of training. They don't need this sophisticated training of how not to give Prabhupada's books to others. By the way, I'm also criticized. Sometimes people say that, you see, I'm engaging my disciples in distributing my books. That's true. That my disciples do distribute my books. They are meant to supplement or to supplement the mission of Srila Prabhupada. They're meant for distribution also. But my answer to that is that yes, it's true. But that if you take my average disciple and compare to the average devotee within ISKCON, you'll find that on average, my disciples read Prabhupada's books and distribute Prabhupada's books significantly more than do others. So it's not that I'm promoting that my books are not Prabhupada's books, but rather as supplements, like the Beginner's Guide for Krishna Consciousness, that's by far the most distributed of my books, and that's to by reading that puts in written form many of the instructions that Prabhupada verbally imparted for practicing Krishna consciousness. So anyway, that's another discussion. That certainly Prabhupada wanted books to be written by his disciples. He criticized the Gauriya Math for not having produced their own books. They're still selling the books of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati only. So he criticized them for that. So, what do we get from all this? Well, either ISKCON in general is there's something very wrong, or I am very wrong. And I invite you to consider. That's, is my perspective simply hypercritical? Or are there serious... things like GBC members playing in the ISKCON golf competition on Gaur Purnima. I mean, any day is bad enough, but on Gaur Purnima day, when you're supposed to be glorifying Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is it, there's not something wrong with that? And the GBC member is not he's not questioned about that. A few years ago, one GBC member was, one of my godbrothers forced him to make a public apology. Forced him means that, you see, this GBC member had accused this god brother of using astrology to seduce women, and he said that there are at least 13 women we can call as evidence for this. And this devotee, who is an astrologer, he, you know, his whole reputation was within ISKCON was spoiled, and his, you know, his way of life was, you know, people didn't want to come to him, and so eventually he, in one of the few cases of some justice actually being, I mean, generally you can't get justice, but he actually he said, okay, you have 13 women, bring one. Tell me one. So like this, he kept on challenging him to bring evidence that he'd actually done this. So eventually that GBC member had to make a public apology and apologize to the GBC for having... He even stated this in Mayapur during a GBC meeting. He lied to the whole GBC, where it practically came to. And so they gave an apology, and life went on as usual. He continued as a GBC. I mean, shouldn't the GBC have thought to remove him for engaging in the nastiest, basest politics against character assassination? Because he didn't like that devotee, so he didn't have any actual complaint. Actually, he didn't like the... Anyway, I won't get in, but... I mean, these things... there are serious problems. So people may say, yeah, I'm hypercritical, although it could also be said that it's just realistic. And then why do I... and then some people will say that, well, you see, that shows everything is all wrong, so Ritvikism is the answer. Or join the Gaudiya Math. But that doesn't necessarily prove the case of, you know, different people would say, well, it's because of this, it's because of that. Why don't you start your own movement? But these are not necessarily the answers. I mean, the Ritvik Vadis, they're quite active in scanning. They go through all lectures that are put on the internet, and they'll probably love this one. But the fact that there are problems in ISKCON doesn't prove their case. And the fact that, you know, Ritvik Vadis are also shown to be corrupt, and in so many problems, and there are factions among them and all kinds of things. I'm not supporting that as a solution. Although, which is one reason that, you know, I've been hesitant to say all these things, but like I say, people should know at least where I stand. So is it not hypocritical for me? Why do I stay in ISKCON? I sometimes wonder myself, but Prabhupada said not to leave. So that's a very powerful instruction. Of course, sometimes I feel that I didn't really, I can't really leave ISKCON, that ISKCON left me, so to speak, because I'm just doing the same things and saying the same things that I did when I first joined, but the movement changed. I didn't change. So I didn't leave ISKCON. ISKCON left me. I mean, all my friends are within ISKCON. That's one thing. I guess principles higher than friendships. But then it has to be seen, as my life is meant to be for the service of Srila Prabhupada, could I actually serve Prabhupada's mission better by going outside of ISKCON and of the body that is of the body of ISKCON? I'm not convinced that I could do so. I could better serve it. For all the wrong things going on, still ISKCON's really the only hope for spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. So to try to get ISKCON in order is a better proposition. It's not so easy. I mean, I've here in Salem, I'm trying to, with the cooperation of you all, especially led by Gokul Chandra Prabhu, I'm trying to set up just what we might call a normal ISKCON center, or what a normal ISKCON center used to be. That everyone has to rise early in the morning. You have the full temple program, and the focus is on book distribution and bringing people to Krishna consciousness. So, just trying to do the all of this, but it's it is difficult to train, even though we have, you know, there's like this little space in this small town here, and in other places also, some devotees. You could say within the broader ISKCON, they're my followers. But it is difficult to train people within the present ISKCON society when there are all these Mayavad and Sahajiya influences. I mean, just like, for instance, I mean, there's thousands of things you could say. Someone you're bringing in new to Krishna consciousness, and they go to Mayapur, and on the bookstall they pick up the book, The Glories of Radharani. And you know, they're just new in Krishna consciousness. And if they get that, you know, what conception are they going to have of Krishna consciousness? One of my disciples told me, he saw one of the devotees who'd gone to Mayapur, just a new person. He just told him, look, better you don't read it. Please read Bhagavad Gita as it is. And he took that book from him. Otherwise he'd be lost in the dream clouds of imaginary prem bhav. So why such books are being produced and offered to the public? That's not the example of our acharyas. Prabhupada hardly talked about Radha. He was the topmost devotee of Radha, but it's a very intimate subject. But just to bring it out in public to everyone is Prakriti Sahajiya influence. So with all these Mayavad and Sahajiya and mundane influences all around, it's difficult to train people because, you know, you don't want to tell people when they first come that there's this problem, that problem, that, and then they just get completely discouraged. But then if you don't tell them, then, you know, they think, well, they go to ISKCON Vrindavan, for instance, and they see and hear so many strange things, and they think, well, it must be the right thing to do because it's ISKCON Vrindavan, for instance. So, how to correct the situation? Who will accept these points? I've several times mentioned to various leaders of our society that, of course, it's not my idea. It's been floating around to have orders, like in the Catholic Church, they have orders. That means there are different subgroups, which they have a certain amount of autonomy, but they all offer allegiance to the Pope in Rome. So something like that, we could have separate orders where we don't necessarily have to go along with them. We're a little different. That might be the solution. It's not really a solution if things are off, if they're wrong, but at least it would give us some approved space to do what we're doing. How to rectify the situation? It seems very difficult. It seems that if at all things are going to get better, and then they're going to have to get worse first, because there's no feeling in our movement even that there's, you know, things are seriously wrong. And rather thinking that, well, things are right and things get worse and worse. And it seems like we really have to get a good kick from, just like the karmis. When are they going to wake up? They need a good kick from Maya to understand that their materialistic plans are all useless. So that may be the situation in our movement also. You don't have to translate for all of this, for all these new people. I have attempted to go through the regular channels to rectify some things which I found frustrating. I became infamous a few years ago for my open attacks. Open means via email, which went out all over the internet, on one of my godbrothers who was, he's passed away now, a popular guru within our movement and populist, you could say. He was known as the mystic guru. So I had some severe exception to some of the things he was writing in his books. So I did try to, you know, behind the scenes, going through the process, discussing with him, having a GPC monitored mediation and all this, but nothing worked. So I tried coming out publicly and just blasting that this is all bogus, and that didn't work either. So I'm not sure what to do. I mean, you could. There are devotees who like regularly. They're out there on the internet expressing their perspectives of what's wrong, but I'd rather write books and for a long-term solution. The, you know, internet advocacy doesn't seem to be that effective. I'm not saying it's all wrong. Just related with that, I was trying to go through some GBC process of rectifying the in these books there are some really wild things written. So I was called to meet this godbrother of mine who was making these wild statements in his books, which are widely distributed within ISKCON and to the public. So I was called to Mayapur at the time of the GBC meeting, and I was asked, well, would you like to join the GBC, the plenary session, all the GBC members together? You can join it for a few minutes and then you can go off and meet with him. So I said, okay, and I came in. And I saw there's a huge, long table with all the GBC members and others present there. And I saw there were mostly men, but a few women there also. So they're like, you know, there'd be like two sannyasis and one woman sitting, and three or four sannyasis, mostly sannyasis, and then some women. I thought, well, this is a bit strange, you know. There's sannyasis and women all sitting at the table. So I went and took a spot to sit, and not next to any woman. And I just looked to my left, and I saw there was a painting. It was an abstract painting, which means impersonalism. And I saw the title, and I couldn't work out what's it supposed to be. It's an abstract. And I saw the title, and it was like the name of some place in Navadvip, Dham. And when I looked at it a bit more, I could work out that it was like some in a very abstract way, supposed to be some scene in Navadvip Dham, but abstract style. Which, like I say, it's impersonalistic. And then I looked all around the room, and I saw the room's full of all these abstract paintings. So then the incoming chairman of the GBC started his speech. So this is the first speech in the GBC meeting of the first speech in the meeting of the whole year. And for about the first 10 minutes, he spoke about some Kami movie that he'd been to. So, you know, first I walked in and saw the men and women all mixed up. Then I saw the abstract paintings. And then a meeting of all the leaders is supposed to discuss how to promote the Sankirtan movement, and there's this telling about some Monty Python movie that he'd been to. I just thought this is very, very strange. When that devotee who was writing those strange books, when he passed away, the GBC gave a condolence or obituary or something like that, and they noted especially one of his great contribution was his books. And I was on a campaign to say that his books are bogus. All kinds of really weird things in there. So then I thought, well, that just shows our movement's a Sahajiya movement, because if they're praising these books, which are completely bogus, then what is that? So recently I've been invited to a leaders meeting in which different leaders from ISKCON are supposed to meet and discuss the proposed proposals for the GBC and give their input in Mayapur just before the GBC meeting. So I appreciate that, because it's been for many years that we just have to accept whatever the GPC say. They can just make rules without discussing with anyone. And it's just like overnight in the year 2000, they changed the whole social ethos of ISKCON by implementing the Women's Rights Bill or something like this, without discussing with the members of ISKCON who it affects. So I appreciate that, but for me it's too late. If 10 years ago I might have gone, but now I told the devotee who's organizing that meeting that I don't want to go, because I don't agree with the idea of sitting around discussing with women, which is part of the ethos in ISKCON today. Whereas Prabhupada, he was not for women having leadership roles. I mean, he wrote against it several times in his books. He never made any women GBCs or temple presidents, with one exception. In the very early days, he made a woman a temple president. So I disagree that, what to speak of sannyasis, any men should sit around for hours discussing with women. I mean, I'm not against women, but I speak with them a little bit. But women should discuss with men means their fathers, their intimate relatives. But the idea that men and women, they're just all mix up and speak so many things, I'm against it. I don't see that that's part of the culture that we're supposed to be instituting. So that's one reason I told him I didn't want to go. Another reason is that I think it's, like I say, it's too far gone for the ideas that I have. I have means, it's my understanding of what Srila Prabhupada taught us, and it's demonstrably closer to what Prabhupada said than a lot of the things that are going on now today. So I don't think anything at this point is going to change. Like I say, you can say this is not right, that's not right, but if at all things are going to get better, it's going to get worse. It's going to have to get worse first. So then why am I speaking all these things anyway? Well, because people ask me. I should at least make it clear to those who are coming to me what my position is. And if they want, because people ask me to be their disciples. So they should know what I stand for. Otherwise they may be disappointed later, or I may be disappointed later, if they don't like the stance that I made. It may seem, like I said, I'm hypercritical of so many sincere devotees. Yeah, I'm sure so many devotees are sincere, but in who are doing many of the things that I'm criticizing here. I was saying that they're wrong, but what is the actual criterion of sincerity? I mean, there are many Christians in this country who are very sincere about converting people to Hindus to Christianity, and when they get baptized, they have to one of the things they have to do is publicly rip up their pictures of Krishna and various Hindu gods and stamp on the pictures. So the Christians are very sincere, and they think that they're doing something good for the people, but now I'm not saying that our devotees who are doing midday meals and all that are in the same category as those Christians, but the point is that sincerity or earnestness is not in and of itself the prime, well, actually, the prime earnestness and sincerity are not necessarily exactly the same thing. The earnestness, that should be, first of all, for the right thing, because you can be very earnest and determined and dedicated to doing something, but if it's not the right thing, then it's the wrong thing. And even if we, you know, we open many temples and we have many people joining and so many things, lots of money, lots of public appreciation, but if for any reason Srila Prabhupada is not pleased, then it's all useless. That's all. And I can only say it's my opinion, because I'm not saying I'm the arbiter of the truth, but that much in our society is not what Prabhupada actually wanted us to do. And speaking this lecture with the idea of putting it on the internet, I doubt if it'll make much effect. It's not that, you know, that this lecture is, everyone's going to get all, okay, now we've got to change this, make it better. There may be the effect that some people will criticize me for being overly critical of others, or some people may say, yes, that was very good. And, you know, after a short time it'll be forgotten. Another thing, I've made several attempts to go through the GBC. Somehow or other, it's all ended. You know, it's very frustrating. So, previously, to make such statements, one would have been smashed by the powers that be. Nowadays, it's more likely to be ignored or politely acknowledged, or maybe, you know, some, yes, we are very concerned, but I don't expect that making this public will affect any great change. But like I say, it's for those who are approaching me, at least to them they can be clear that I perceive that there are many things, you know, that our movement's basically off the track and not properly following Srila Prabhupada. I know this is very discouraging. It may sound very discouraging, but the good news is that you still can follow Srila Prabhupada, and whatever anyone does to change this way and that way, Prabhupada's books are still there. Prabhupada, he knew, he put his books out. He said that even if everyone goes away, my books are there, and by reading the books, people will again take it up. So, you can follow. And at least here, again, I'm saying that as I perceive it, here we are following Krishna Consciousness and Srila Prabhupada in a manner that is actually conducive for spiritual advancement. It's not mixed up with mundane psychology, mundane welfare, mundane welfare work, or if you say that the midday meals, etc., is not mundane welfare work, at least it's presented like that. It's presented as if it's mundane welfare work, so it's a close approximation of mundane welfare work, and where it begins or ends is subject to discussion. So at least here we're trying to make that, as I say, make that ethos in which we can practice Krishna consciousness as Srila Prabhupada wanted us to, without making various changes this way, that way, and the other way. And we find that at least some people are appreciating that and finding that there's a vibrant, uplifting spiritual atmosphere here. And we find that, especially for festivals, more and more devotees are coming fairly long distances to join in the festivals and rather attend here than in the center in their own town, because they find it a better spiritual atmosphere. So, Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments on this? Like I say, this might elicit, when it goes on the internet, it might elicit some responses and this and that, and people may write to me. But I'm not much into having protracted arguments by email or on the internet, because I see it doesn't go anywhere. So I'm stating my case, and like I say, I'm not gonna, I don't intend to get into a nitty gritty defense of every little point. Can't spend all my time getting these, like you get these email debates, they go on and on and on. At the end, no one changes their position anyway. So, what's the point? Yeah, anything? Better all have a big kirtan after this, which is what we mostly do here, a lot of kirtan, recover from all this. There are so many things that can be said. One of my disciples, he said, after being to a leader's meeting, a 3 days leader meeting, he said, I need about 2 weeks to recover from it. He feels so contaminated by the association of people. I went to one of them once, this area. And were you there? I think in Bangalore. After some time, I just said, hey, let's have a kirtan, because it's trying to make a spiritual atmosphere. It was just all so mundane and arguing and this and that. And so I did a kirtan, which no one could refuse, but no one was very enthusiastic for it either. So, yeah, I remember in the years ago, in the BTG, printed from America, there's so many things that... So a devotee wrote an article about, said, oh, I just attended another boring BTG editors meeting. Well, why boring? I mean, it should be the most enlivening thing. So, presenting a magazine that's meant for the re-spiritualization of human society. They're saying it was boring. It was like, so... I mean, if you start, there's no end to the strange things that have entered our movement. And it's not just me saying, by the way. It's not my own personal trip. Even, you see, the GBC now, in any letter they send out, they always refer to women as Prabhu, whereas one of the most prominent and respected GBC members put on his, what do you call that, blog? When they speak something? Webcast?
Blog.
When it's spoken, it's also called a blog? Yeah, so he replied to this question, what do you think of calling women Prabhu? And he openly said, it's all nonsense. he's also saying that at least one of the things that's been introduced in our movement recently, within the GBC, is nonsense. So, at least on some issues, there are some things that people agree with. On that issue also, Hari Shori Prabhu, who was Prabhupada's servant for over a period of a few years, and all the time he was with Prabhupada, he never once heard any Prabhupada or anyone else in ISKCON call women Prabhu. nowadays, if you don't call them Prabhu, they become upset. It's considered to be a great crime by some people. So, anything? Yeah. In Guru Vaya, they serve prasadam in the temple itself. Mm-hmm. To the general public. Yeah.
That cooking, for example, we cater in our temple. And then that cooking is done by machine.
In Guruvaya also, they cook with machines? No. It's cooked in a traditional method by brahmanas over fires. They've introduced steam cooking. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good program. I've said several times to Gokul Chandra, I also said just yesterday that it's an important thing we have to start. That people who come to, like in Udupi and Guruvaya, people, full meal prasad served to anyone who comes. So that's a good program. We should do that. And we see in Udupi, so many students go there daily. No one complains. They give them prasadam. So we can do that. In Gainesville, in Florida, for many years they've been serving prasadam to the students there, midday. It was free, I believe, and now they do it at a very low price. And they generally have kirtan going on. They serve it on the lawn. So that's well appreciated. That's good. Mm.
What are the answers to those say that by Bhaktivedanta Hospital?
We are making devotees by this, by Bhaktivedanta Hospital. Yeah, but again, it's like that. I quoted that about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. If he just, you know, compromised his philosophy a bit, there'd be so many more people would come and join. But he didn't. So if you compromise the philosophy a bit, so many more people will come, but they won't have a clear understanding of what bhakti is. So some good things, all right, they may become vegetarian and chant Hare Krishna, but they won't get a proper understanding of the philosophy if it's not taught. It's a fact that if you just make things a little less strict, then people can come much more easily. But the problem is that the essence is lost. They'll become devotees and then they'll also want to go and open hospitals and approach people and tell people, you see, we're helping the poor, this, that and the other. Which is not our philosophy, to help people on the... As a prime activity of our movement to help people on a bodily level. That's very clear from this reply to the Andhra Pradesh Relief Committee. Prabhupada could have agreed, it was not a big thing to ask to have a collection. That's all they asked for, is a collection to help their activities. Prabhupada refused and said no. He practically told them that your whole idea is demoniac. Why is all this happening when Prabhupada's books are there? Well, I guess people aren't reading Prabhupada's books. And that's another common thing. You'll find people there initiated 10 years and they haven't read even one canto of Bhagavatam. And it's quite common. You know, people are initiated and they don't have any idea that they're not supposed to worship demigods. They're not supposed to eat kami food. It's become very cheap. quality is being sacrificed for the sake of quantity. So why is it happening? Well, ask the people who are propagating all these things. Why are they doing it? Maya doesn't sleep.
In the case of establishing a national project, many people propose that if we make the standards a little less strict, many people will come. But we see from logic that we make the standards less strict, but because of that, so many communities have failed. Does this same thing apply to that also by establishing a national that, okay, we not keep standards very strict and afterwards...
The idea that if we don't make standards very strict, then many people can come. But in Varnashram communities or temple communities or whatever. But what we factually see, if the standards aren't strict, then the whole project fails. So, purity is the force. It's a great art to keep strong standards and at the same time be flexible enough to allow for people's weaknesses. But once you institutionalize low standards, then everything is lost. Just like, for instance, in the West, if devotees divorce, remarry, it's just considered normal. There's nothing really that wrong with it. But that's a compromise. That's a compromise with illicit sex. So that's a problem. But the thing is that the problem is there, and it becomes so common, and we don't know what to do, and then we don't really think of it as a problem anymore. It's still a problem. It's just like AIDS is a problem, but people don't talk about it that much. It's just people go on dying all around us because... what can you do, So like that, child abuse. People know it's a problem, but, what can you do? You just have to get in. You have to go on with life. So we may think, well, things are so bad, so we'll just go along with it. But if we go along with it, then there's no hope of any improvement. I'm pretty heavy on my disciples who... divorce, and I don't encourage that in any way whatsoever. And they may, they may become discouraged and go away from devotional service. But what do you do if you say, okay, it's all right, never mind, and then it becomes accepted. So what do? You sacrifice the individual or the standards? It's not easy. Yeah.
Actually, you can see that the sannyas is not supposed to do politics, but there are so many sannyasis in the GBC.
How is it possible that there are sannyasis in the GBC when sannyasis are not supposed to do politics? Well, the GBC is also not supposed to do politics. But it's inevitable when there's an organization and there's power and money and there's people who are less than Paramahamsas, that there will be what, if it wasn't ISKCON, we would call politics. So these things go on. Therefore, some people propose that there should be no sannyasis on the GBC. That was Prabhupada's original idea, actually, to have grihasthas. But then he changed that. It's difficult. I mean, an institution means there are going to be problems. Religion or actual religion is, you can't institutionalize. The very attempt to institutionalize it goes against the whole spirit. But on the other hand, we require an institution. So anyway, maybe at some point I'll discuss all these things in a book. Yeah. One can still follow Srila Prabhupada despite all of this. Yeah, one can do. But it can become quite difficult to do so also, especially if you're surrounded or you don't have association of others who are doing so or who purport to be doing so, but it's just like you may be in a city where there are literally hundreds of devotees. I'm thinking of a particular city, not very far from here, but in which pretty much all of them regularly eat kami food, and if anyone wants to not do that, they discourage them and they say that you should take your wife out to a restaurant every so often. It turned out kami restaurant. So you want to have association with devotees, but do you want to associate with devotees who are saying such things and doing such things? So you can follow Srila Prabhupada, but it's a difficult path. It's easier not to go with the flow, but you have to see where the flow is going. So you can do it, but it's not always going to be very easy.
Especially in the West, he did everything alone. So his preaching, his mood to go to preach.
The mood to go to preach, yeah.
It's the only solution.
To preach is the only solution, yeah. The positive is the only solution. So that's what I said, that's what we're trying to do here, to do something in the right way, preaching the right thing.
Because if I go out and I distribute the book with the intention to save that soul, and after that I can think if this person go to some temple, it will be ruined.
Yeah, that's a problem. Vijay, I shouldn't have said that. A prominent book distributor in America told me that there's only one or two, if he meets people who are interested and want to visit our centers, he said there's only one or two centers in the whole of America that he would recommend any person to go to. Because he's afraid if he goes to, they're more likely to get a bad impression of Krishna consciousness rather than what enlivens them in the book. When they go to the temple, they don't find the same thing. Several years ago, a leading devotee in Bangladesh, he told me that someone had asked him, a member of the public had asked him, should we follow what you do or what's in your books? So even the public can see. And maybe that will be the hope also, that as the world by book distribution, as that goes on more and more and more, and as, you know, hopefully it'll go on more and more and more, there are certain envious people within our movement who want to stop. That's another thing. Years ago there was a North American GBC meeting about how to revive the preaching in America. And the first proposal they brought up was to stop book distribution. That's the answer. But instead they say, you see, people can't relate to it and this and that. And really seriously, seriously off. So, but as the books are distributed more and more, then it may be that the members of the public themselves demand that, you know, you give us what's in the books. That may be the hope. Okay, Hare Krishna.